This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Hello and welcome to Real Health with me, Carl Henry. Dementia, a difficult word to say the least, and one that naturally inspires fear and panic in us. But what do we really know about dementia and the effects it can have on a person? What are the warning signs to look out for? Can we make changes in our lifestyle to avoid it entirely? And what does a life with dementia look like? My guest this week is author, neuroscientist and psychologist, Dr. Sabina Brennan, who specialises in matters of the brain and is here to help us understand better this deeply challenging illness. Sabina, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
All the way from County Cavan, huh?
There you go. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to this because I've been reading lots and lots over the last couple of months about dementia. It's been very topical in conversation with clients and in the newspapers and stuff. So let's get started. In the very simplest terms, what exactly is dementia? Let's start there.
Yeah, that's a good place to start because it can be quite confusing because dementia is an umbrella term that describes about 200 different conditions that give rise to symptoms that we also call dementia. So that's why it can get a bit confusing. So, and then people get confused between Alzheimer's disease and dementia. So Alzheimer's disease is what we hear talked about mostly because it's the most common form of dementia. So that's the way to look at it. So we actually draw a distinction now in research between Alzheimer's disease and Alzheimer's dementia. So Alzheimer's disease being the pathology in your brain, and Alzheimer's dementia being the symptoms that we associate with something like Alzheimer's disease, which is memory loss and confusion and other associated symptoms. But there are other types of dementia. There's vascular dementia. There's Lewy body dementia. Sometimes with Parkinson's disease, you can get a dementia. And then as people get older in very, very late life, as my mum had, is a mixed dementia, which might be a little bit of three of them put together, you know. So it is kind of important for people, if they do have a loved one who has dementia, to find out which type they have. I'm often surprised. I talk to people and they say, oh, my mum has dementia, my dad. And I'll say, oh, what type? And they don't know. Mm-hmm. And they have very different disease trajectories. And I think that's important. I think people ask, you know, I know it can be, you know, it can be devastating when you hear a diagnosis like that about yourself or also for someone else. And so it might take time before you actually have the wherewithal to ask questions. But whenever you do have the time, do ask. It's very important to know.
And do we know what actually causes it?
Do you know what? When I say Alzheimer's disease, we know there's plaques and tangles in the brain that supposedly causes Alzheimer's disease, but we don't know what causes the plaques and tangles. But what we do know a lot about, and this is what's really important to get across to people, because there's a lot of fatalism about dementia. You know, people don't want to talk about it. As you said, they stick their head in the sand and they say, oh, well, sure, there's nothing you can do about it. So I'm just not going to think about it and hope it won't happen. And that's really wrong approach to it, because there's a lot of research obviously trying to look for a cure and understand the disease. But there's a huge body of research that tells us about the risk factors for the disease. And that then, the flip side of that is we know what you can do to reduce the likelihood that you will develop the disease, but not also reduce your risk of developing the disease. Also, even if you do get the disease, to change the trajectory of the disease so that you push out when you might get symptoms, so you get to live independently for longer. So would you like me to talk about those risk factors?
You just, if you didn't know, I'd be very upset. You just teed them up perfectly for me there, which is lovely. So we're dying to hear all about it. Okay, so presumably there's a lot of the healthy lifestyle factors.
Yeah.
They're some of the obvious ones, I'd imagine.
Yeah, some are very obvious. But first of all, I should say age is the biggest risk factor. It's a disease of later life. It's a neurodegenerative disease. You will hear about some people getting early onset dementia. Now, that doesn't mean that they're in the early stages of Alzheimer's disease. It's a different type of disease, and that can affect people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, or whatever. So it is it's a dementia also, but it happens early onset. Most dementias, as you get older, your risk of getting them is increased. Now, the second factor that people often ask me about and are concerned about, as I mentioned earlier, my mom has dementia. So a lot of people assume that if their parents have dementia, that they're at increased risk. And what we do know is there is a genetic element. Okay, there's a certain allele. And if you have one of them, you have an increased risk. If you have two of them, you have more of a risk. But there's two things that it's important to say to people about that. One is that the risk associated with genetics is small compared to the risk associated with all the lifestyle factors that I'm going to talk to you about. The second thing is that genetic element, it's neither, in a scientific term, it's neither necessary nor sufficient. So the necessary bit means you don't have to have that gene to get dementia. The sufficient bit means you can have that genetic profile and never get dementia. So the thing is, you know, to focus on the lifestyle factors is what's the most important. And like, it's big. We know that there are 12 what we call modifiable risk factors, things that you can do something about, that they account for 40% of all cases of Alzheimer's disease. So if you think that there are currently 50 million people living with dementia globally, and that figure is set to triple by 2050, then if we could eradicate completely, now that's too blue sky, it's not going to be possible, but if we could eradicate those 12 risk factors completely, that'd be 20 million people and their families who wouldn't have dementia at this point. So the risk factors are alcohol consumption, midlife obesity. An interesting thing, and you're probably aware of this from your side of things, in later life, being frail and underweight is a problem, but it's absolutely in midlife. Yeah. So in midlife obesity, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, again in midlife, air pollution is one that's in there as well, physical inactivity, having a TBI or a traumatic brain injury, you know, mm-hmm. at some point in your life does increase the risk, depression, social isolation, smoking, less education or lack of mental stimulation, and hearing loss. And I have given those in the order of the percentage reduction that they would account for from low to high. So that 40% that I spoke about, 8% of that 40% is contributed to by hearing loss. So the good thing about hearing loss is what the research shows is if you get a hearing aid, if you have hearing loss and you get and wear a hearing aid, it mitigates the risk completely. So get your hearing checked. That's really important. Similarly, with if you have high blood pressure, and a lot of people, the thing with high blood pressure is it's a lot of people walking around with it and they have no idea that they have it. Mm-hmm. It is sort of symptomless. So it's brilliant that nowadays you can pop in and get your blood pressure tested in a pharmacy. You can also, you know, usually now I know when I go to my doctor, my GP, she always takes my blood pressure. So do yourself a favor, get it checked, because then you can get it under control either through lifestyle or medication. The alcohol consumption, you know, it used to be a recommendation, you know, a glass of red wine a day because the Mediterranean diet is very good. In terms of just cognitive function, now I'm not talking about dementia risk, what the research shows is that people who don't drink have better cognitive functioning than even people who drink in moderation.
So zero alcohol is the ultimate kind of
if
health.
You want to have a sharp brain, etc. But I always kind of wait, and I'm only sending the message, I like a G&T myself. No, but it's important that people have the choice to make. And I always think, you know, stress is really not good for your brain. So sometimes people find that as a as a stress release and, you know, as a way to socialize so that they're counteracting social isolation. And we have a lot of that in rural Ireland, where the only place that people can go to socialize is a pub. But now, until that changes, you know, so kind of these things can kind of be weighed up. You know, if you have depression, go and see someone about it, talk about it, because that can kind of lead to other factors.
In terms of the alcohol consumption, then, presumably excessive alcohol consumption, which is how a lot of people in Ireland consume alcohol, is bad for your brain health.
That increases your risk of developing dementia, and so do smoking. Smoking is terrible for your brain. I mean, you're literally putting toxins into your brain, and your brain is very, very vulnerable to toxins.
I'm fascinated by smoking, particularly in the last, say, year or so. The more you look at it, the more you see it in terms of who smokes now. And actually, people do, despite the fact that... On the packets, they're telling you what and showing you with images.
I saw a packet the other day, and it's just awful. But that's the nature of addiction, because it is an addictive drug. I'm an ex-smoker for maybe 30 years. But I started very young in my teen years, so that's why I'm really, really passionate that. You know, brain health is, you know, I'm on this mission to get people, you know, looking after their brain health as routinely as they brush their teeth. And a lot of people think because it's something that's related to dementia often, that it's just something for older people to think about. But how your brain works impacts everything. And I really think we should be educating our young, you have two young kids, get them doing stuff to look after their brain health and talk to them about their brain health from the time they're young, because they've learned about a complex concept called investment when they've learned how to brush their teeth, because that is a lifelong investment so that you get to hold on to your pearly whites.
It is important to reassure all the parents of young children out there that they don't necessarily have dementia because they can't remember the last year or two because life has been so busy with the kids. Not a sign, sure, it's not?
No, it's not. And actually, you know, I have written a book, and one of the reasons I did write my first book is all about, you know, dementia risk reduction. But my second book was about beating brain fog, which is entirely different. It's not a neurodegenerative disease, but it is associated with things like if you have young kids and you've a lot of stress going on and you have a job and you're not getting good sleep at night, and various factors for women, hormonal fluctuations around pregnancy, around their period. But then when women head into menopause, and particularly for women heading into menopause, a lot of women were catastrophizing because perhaps they're looking after older parents who have dementia, and they're absolutely terrified that this, you know, this disruption, this brain fog, which really can be quite debilitating. And we've heard a lot about it with long COVID. It's one of the positives for me around the pandemic is it has shone a spotlight on how debilitating brain fog can be. But yes, absolutely.
They're two very different things, which is important.
Very different things. Yeah, brain fog is something that you can do something about, again, through lifestyle choices. And of course, you need to rule out that you don't have an underlying health condition. It's not necessarily a neurological condition, but again, conditions that disproportionately affect women tend to be associated with brain fog. So migraine, autoimmune conditions, multiple sclerosis. So it's important to rule out, you know, other underlying factors. But generally, in my experience, it's a couple, when a few factors come into play together, that then your brain really kind of can't cope. And if you just see brain fog I often liken it to a cough. It's not a disease, it's not a disorder, it's not a diagnosis, but it is a signal that something is amiss. So if you have brain fog after jet lag, you know, that's the jet lag, my brain's not working. But if it persists and if it starts to interfere with your quality of life, et cetera, it's a signal to look into it. Why is it happening? Same as a cough. If you have a cough with a cold, well, you know, that's it. But if a cough persists for a few months, something's not right here. And you go to your doctor. Now, the cough isn't a disease or a disorder, but it is a signal something's wrong. And it may not even be something to do with your respiratory system. A cough can signify, what's that, gorge, the reflux, or it can be It can be asthma, all right, but it can also be related to heart conditions. So that's my point. Yep. If your brain feels like it's malfunctioning in some way, investigate it and don't be catastrophizing that it's dementia.
Good. Can someone who has dementia live a normal and healthy life, say after they get diagnosed?
Yeah, I think that's really, really important. I'm absolutely passionate. It breaks my heart when I hear people say about a parent or a spouse, oh, they're gone. You know, they're not there anymore. Yes, they absolutely are there. Dementia only affects certain parts of your brain, but there's certain parts of your brain that change how we interact with people. You may have loss of language, you may have loss of recent memory, but inside there is still a human being who has the same needs, experiences, depression, wants to be happy, wants to laugh, wants to live a normal life. It's up to us to actually try and figure out if communication has become complicated. And I really find that keeping a diary can help understand what's going on. Because often, say, with some dementias, Alzheimer's, some people can get a bit aggressive or difficult to handle. And if you look at what precedes that, you may see it's a trigger. Mm-hmm. It's really just a way to communicate. You may have put clothes on that are desperately uncomfortable for them, or clothes they don't want to wear or that they don't like, but they can't communicate that. Similarly, if you keep a diary and start to notice what happens before you have really good interactions and really good days, you introduce more of those. And what I'd say to people is forget about, I was fortunate my mum didn't forget who I was, but forget about hanging on to things like, oh, I was here yesterday, Mum. Do you not remember? I bought you flowers. We talked about, you know, that's like going in and reminding someone, you know, you do have cancer. Yeah, you know that, you know, you got to go in and just have a conversation. There's a part of your brain involved in emotional memory and it isn't affected by dementia. So that person, whether they know your name or not, or whether they know you're their daughter or their wife, will know whether they're going to have a good time with you or whether you're going to make them feel bad by saying, you know, do you not remember this? Do you not remember that? So that worked amazingly with my mom. We just, myself and my husband, just focused on having fun. And my husband would slagger to bits, you know, and she fancied my husband, you know, unashamedly. And he played along. Like, you know, hey, what was the deal? He had to dodge, you know, the kisses with his cheek sometimes.
Did you ever see Afterlife with Ricky Gervais?
I can't watch it. I'm too much of a softie. I watched the first episode.
Oh my God,
episode.
It's amazing. It's a game changer. Anyway, it's an amazing, and if you're looking for something to watch in September when we all settle back down to routine, have a look at Afterlife. But in it, his dad has dementia and he's in the and he goes in every day to see the dad and all the stuff that you're chatting about. And as it goes on, he adapts his way of dealing with his dad to exactly what you're saying, which is he plays along with it. He goes along with it. And the relationship between the two of them becomes even closer. It's very emotional. Yes. Like you ball your way through it. Right?
Yeah, you are actually going to make me cry.
But it's brilliant.
That's why I can't watch those. But it is absolutely true. Yeah. I was got closer to my mom. And I didn't have a brilliant relationship with my mom as a teen. I was rebellious. And my mom was quite controlling, you know. She figured out who I should be. And I struggled to figure out who I was. Probably why I became an actor in the first instance. And probably why I studied psychology and neuroscience.
We all have reasons.
Yeah, we all do. But she, there was a raw honesty that came that had never been there before. Mm-hmm. Do you know what? The best way to deal with dementia is you get all your practical ducks in a row. What is it? You know, what do I need to keep doing? And follow all the brain health advice for everyone, apply that exercise, social engagement, doing challenging stuff. Never do for. When someone gets sick, we tend to do everything for them. When it comes to dementia, that is depriving them of their right to their life and it's accelerating their disease. So just like Ricky Gervais, you let them do their own thing. You have to learn patience because it may take them a hell of a long time to do up that cardigan or a hell of a long time to make the sandwich. But let them do it. And then as it progresses, if you see decline, you can offer little bits of help. Very gradual, but let them, you know, do what they were doing. I got sidetracked there.
That's okay. I threw you there. That's perfectly. Me and Ricky Gervais totally threw you.
I'm gonna
pull it back for the listener then to the end, which is that, you know, if you want people to have one big takeaway from the chat that we've had today in terms of their brain health and keeping it active, I know there's loads, obviously.
Well, I won't do one. Well, okay, I can do one. I mean, it's activity, attitude, and lifestyle. So, you know, the one tip I would give to people is to have fun, to smile, to enjoy life, to laugh. Laughter is nature's natural stress buster. Keeps you in the moment. Smiling has huge health benefits, including lowering your blood pressure and boosting your immune function, you know, all things that kind of interrelate. That's kind of what I would say. You know, I mean, people can pick up from the risk factors I talked about, the things that they need to do. But I think we forget, we're so busy building careers and raising families. And like I say it actually in the Brain Fog book, I have a whole section on stress. And all I get say to people is just create a habit where you allow yourself at least 1 hour a day to do something fun that you enjoy for the hell of it. And especially something where you lose track of time. You know those things where you forget to eat. Now, it's not good not to eat, but you know where you're just engrossed.
You're submerged.
You're in the flow. Yeah. And that's different for everybody.
Listen, you've smiled all the way through the last 20 minutes. It's been great catching up with you. I know you have two books and you have your brain gym as well. If people want to follow you or find you, where can they find you?
They can find me on Instagram, Sabina Brennan, and on Twitter, at Sabina Brennan. And if they want to find out my books and stuff, superbrain.ie, because I'm not on Instagram as much as I should
be. That's going to be your homework, is get more of this of this content that people need to hear what you have to say, and you have a great way of saying it and a great way of communicating it. So superbrain.ie for the brain gym or for your books, and your homework is to do some more Instagram work. Sabina, lovely to see you, lovely to catch
you
up
too.
With you, enjoy Cavan, and we'll catch up in person very, very soon. Folks, I really hope you enjoyed today's episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry. As ever, you know where we are, at Carl Henry PT on Instagram, realhealth@independent.ie. Go and find your mindful brain homework this week. Do your 1 hour every day. Smile more, and we'll see you next week for more Real Health. Slán go fóill.